Welcome back, everybody, to the KookCenter.com podcast. I'm Brian Floyd, and I'm flying solo today. Usually you'd hear Jeff Neuser's voice starting it off, but he had prior commitments, so going alone today. And we have a very special guest, following in the footsteps of Chris Brown and Bruce Feldman, another all-star guest lined up in Holly Anderson of SportsIllustrated.com, formerly of EverydayShouldBeSaturday.com, Nesby Nation. Holly is one of my favorite blog people around and just one of my favorite people in general. I got to know her working at SBNation.com, where she kind of took me under her wing and was my mama blogging shark, taught me kind of everything that there was to need to know about working on the internet, dealing with being an internet writer person thing, and kind of how to do the job well and have a strong work ethic. So we spent a lot of time slaving over spreadsheets and coordinating coverage, and basically ended up being the reason that I did get my job. So she's always been a great influence, and on top of that, she's just a very talented writer, hilarious, can always make a story interesting, can always find interesting stories, and that's a big reason why she's at SI.com now. She's kind of a supplement to the brilliant writers that they have there, and Andy Staples and Stuart Mandel primarily. So she runs their daily blog, Campus Union. It has a punter in the banner, so that should tell you all you need to know. It's Brad Wing, a punter from LSU that we're all pretty big fans of. It's offbeat, fun news, especially in the offseason. She gets kind of tracked down all the interesting stuff and write about it, spin off of it, make jokes, so it should be a daily read from you. And with that, we'll get into the interview with Holly Anderson. All right, we're here with Holly Anderson, Holly of SI.com's Campus Union, formerly of EDSBS, SB Nation, Dr. Saturday. Where else you been?
I think that's pretty much it.
Covered it all. So you've been a little bit everywhere on the internet and pretty much well-known at this point. Tell me a little bit about Campus Union. What is it? Why is it so awesome? Because it is awesome. And what do you do there every day?
Campus Union was SI's way of kind of trying to bring more of a daily dose of levity into the big serious columns that they put out a couple times a week. So, you know, you'll have big, huge pieces from Stu Mandel, big, huge pieces from Andy Staple, who just actually posted something on the Sabanization of SEC football that SB Nation readers will find familiar and comforting. And so while they're doing their big columns every week, I'm there every day doing shorter stuff, doing quicker stuff, saying that Terry Bowden looks like Violet Beauregard, you know, stuff like that.
So you get to spend every day just joking around about college football and having a lighter side of sports then.
This is basically the job I've had for 4 years, and it's still the happiest accident that's ever happened.
It is pretty great. I mean, it's a sport. You don't have to take it seriously, and you get to make fun of everything pretty much every day.
What do you mean you don't have to take it seriously? You know how close I live to Auburn?
Yeah, that's true. You are an SEC country.
Tell these people they don't have to take it seriously. I try not to take it seriously, but I live 45 minutes from Auburn.
You start getting death threats and angry emails and all that fun stuff.
You know what's cool about SI is that, speaking of death threats, you know, you are exposed to an audience that isn't necessarily as in on the joke as they were at SB Nation. So you get some people who are like, you know, what the hell are you on about, you dopey bitch? But it's never as bad as it was at Yahoo. Yeah. Like, that was a really good place to start, because when you get the rape threats and the Google Earth screenshots of your house on a regular basis, nothing else really seems that bad.
No, they have the commenters there always. They're an interesting bunch, man. I can't even read the comments there anymore, and I couldn't imagine writing for them.
Yeah, it was a really good starting job, because I mean working there was a lot of fun, but it will never again be that bad in terms of feedback anywhere, I hope. It's like working on a YouTube page.
Oh man, just the worst. So speaking of off season, lighter side of football, all of that, what is your favorite thing that has happened this offseason that you've kind of got to riff off of, or just that you saw? And what is your least favorite? What was the worst part of this offseason?
Oh, God. Well, let's start with the worst and get it out of the way, because I think this is a common sentiment among everybody. I mean, the worst story has to be Penn State. And it's really hard to say this and not make yourself sound like the victim, because of course we, the writers, are not at all victimized in this in any way. But I didn't get into this business to write about child rape. Did you?
No, not at all. And like that running story for the last year, just the worst.
Yeah. Not a fan of, and you know, anytime something happens like that, or, you know, the shootings at Auburn, I just feel kind of useless, because my purpose is to make jokes, and it makes me feel really frivolous anytime something like that happens. And it's just a very stark reminder of just how goofy this job really is.
Yeah, I mean, one day you're joking about a random tweet or a picture, and the next day, like, it gets serious real, real fast, and it's not fun when that shift happens at all.
Yeah, they're good about not putting me on the real heavy stuff. Like, I did not want to go to state college. I didn't have to go to state college because, I mean, what am I going to do in state college? You know, make an animated GIF of Jerry Sandusky walking into the courthouse?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'll pick a Pac-12 thing from my favorite story because it's recent, and this has been a summer of fun. I mean, there have been the horrible stories, but there have been some really great stories this summer. But honest to God, my favorite is this Lane Kiffin USA Today fight. This is so funny because so many people have been required to invoke the phrase integrity of the coaches poll.
And you know the coaches aren't actually voting in it anyway.
Yeah, let's take a poll here just among the two. Let's take a poll of ourselves just on this podcast. How many coaches do you think voted in that poll?
Probably less than 5%, I'd say. Like, it's SIDs. You know it's SIDs voting.
It's all SIDs. And it's maybe not even anybody that high, as we found out when a couple years ago when Spurrier got in trouble for not putting Tebow on his preseason SEC ballot. I think it was somebody not even that high up. But, and I think that number will drop even more once they actually get into the season, because honestly, how are we still, all of us, you know, from USA to on down, still fooling ourselves? This is a thing that matters. Of course, coaches aren't going to watch games that aren't pertinent to theirs. They have enough to do.
Yeah. And you got a lot of these guys are playing, you know, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night games. When are they going to vote? Like, got to be in by Sunday morning. What's the point? Like, they'll pass it off to somebody else. Say, here, just fill this out with whoever. It's kind of a pointless poll.
Yeah, so I'm not arguing that coaches should vote in the coaches poll, because Lord knows they have enough to do and they never see their families as it is. I'm arguing that the coaches poll should not be a thing.
It should not, like, weigh as heavily as it does. Like, it's a terrible, terrible thing in the first place, and now it means a bunch. So it's like, why? Why is it there?
So, like, this was the fun combo of, well, everybody kind of hates the coaches poll, but, you know, it's Lane Kiffin. But, you know, well, he hadn't really done anything annoying yet, but it was the coupling of that story with Jim Mora saying that USC was full of murders and then had to act like he was sorry about that. This was just a really fun week for Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm kind of liking the back and forth in Los Angeles at this point. Jim Mora is not afraid to do what Jim Mora does. And Lane Kiffin actually seems like the good guy. He's just over there chilling right now. And
it's weird. It's weird.
The roles are completely reversed.
You know what they need to do is take out another one of those ads and say, like, the douchebag monopoly is over, with Jim Mora pointing.
I think that's a logical next step at this point, is it has to happen.
Yeah. And see, I'm fine. I shouldn't say I'm fine. If Jim Mora wants to be, we wrote this earlier this week, if Jim Mora wants to be the guy who implies to parents that, you know, your kids might get murdered if they sign at USC, and believe me, if you think things like the Auburn murders aren't used in recruiting against them, you're kidding yourself. But if Jim Mora wants to be the guy who does that and then brags about it on live radio, that's his thing. But why walk back? Why even act like you're sorry about that?
Well, and you can't really walk that back. Like, you saw how it happened.
So why attempt? He didn't even stick the landing.
No, it was a clumsy attempt to walk it back when, you know, we knew exactly what he was talking about, and he can plead ignorance all he wants, but no, I'm not buying it, and I don't care.
You need to commit to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's this kind of softness that has made UCLA such a non-entity in the conference the past couple of years. Come on, Mora.
Yeah, I mean, just go with it. If you're going to say it on live radio, everybody knows you're going to use that kind of stuff in recruiting. Everybody does. If you're going to say it on live radio, you might as well just stick with it.
And it's red meat for the base. Like, I was talking to a reader last night who honestly did not understand why people in the Big Ten he's a Wisconsin fan, hate Brett Bielema. I'm like, well, listen, everybody hates the heel unless you're on his team. I mean, is there anything a fan base loves more than something a coach or their team says or does that can pump up their own special sense of smugness?
No, because they're my dirtbag, not yours. So
yeah,
you love
yeah.
your dirtbag.
And we are so special, and we are way less murdery. You know, he should have stuck with that. This way he ends up pleasing nobody. If he's going to do that, if you're going to be that guy, go for it. Like, go all in.
Yeah, I mean, Kiffin really used to be, or he probably still is, the quintessential heel. And now you got Moore over there kind of trying to be, kind of not. It's really weird.
And Kiffin has said in the past, and I thought this was an adorable way of, and actually a really good way of getting another dig in at Tennessee, has said in the past that he acted like such a dolt at Tennessee because he thought he needed to raise the program's profile. Like, you know, it's a program profile that needed raising, and that's why he doesn't do it anymore at USC. And I miss it. I miss the Kiffin that coached at Tennessee because that guy, they didn't always win, but he's interesting.
Oh, yeah. He's a great interview. He's kind of fun to listen to. He can be pissing and all that, but, I mean, he's got his deal, and it's even at USC, like, it's fun to watch.
We only had him for a year, but just watching him poke people and you know, watching him put up a lifetime 1-0 record against Steve Spurrier, no matter my feelings about Lane Kiffin leaving Tennessee, that will never not be funny.
That's kind of why I miss, like, Lane Kiffin and Rick Neuheisel in the LA schools. Like, they were, yeah. You know how Neuheisel is, like, he's a smooth talker and all that, and they were, like, meant for each other. They were a perfect couple. So, sticking with Tennessee, we stole one of your assistants.
I know, enjoy him.
I love him. He's hilarious. UW stole a couple. Kind of everybody picked him off. So what is the deal with Tennessee right now? Is the ship going down? Is Dooley's perfect hair going to stay around like I hope it is? What do you think?
All right, this is going to take some background. We kind of laid this out. We kind of laid this out in our college football hot seat roundtable we did last Friday. But the thing about Tennessee is we don't have enough information. Like, I can't tell you if Derek Dooley is the guy for Tennessee. I don't know. And it's a weird thing to say after 2 years, but with everything that happened last year, by which I mean losing so many starters, including your starting quarterback and wide receiver to injury, and then having an injured starting tailback, by week six, I think, no, earlier than that, this was like the first weekend in October. This was by the time they played Georgia. Tyler Bray went down halfway through that game. Justin Hunter was already out. Tauren Poole injured himself in that game. That began a schedule stretch that encompassed Georgia, Arkansas, LSU, and Alabama, all of whom were ranked in, I think, like the top 15, 4 weeks in a row, without your starting quarterback and starting wide receiver. How on earth did anybody think that was going to turn out? That was already a murderer's row of a schedule, even without those guys. But so much, you know, Bray was out for most of the season. Hunter was out for the vast majority of the season. And they had so many other injuries pile up. You know, they were missing their best linebacker for the entire year, Herman Lathers. I don't think we can use last year at all for data collection purposes. I feel like I know as much about Tennessee going into year three as I did going into year two. I think they're going to be better for a lot of reasons, mostly if they can keep everybody healthy. But the schedule gets a little less murdery this year. LSU and Arkansas roll off the schedule. Mississippi State comes on, Mizzou comes on, and neither of those games are pushovers, but neither are they LSU and last year's Arkansas team.
So what do you make of all the coaches leaving, though? Because it was weird. It was like vultures were circling, and everybody gets a piece of Tennessee. So like,
I think it's both. I think it's both a combination of, well, in the terms of the assistants that went back to the Northwest, you had a couple guys who wanted to be closer to home. But you did have a lot of guys making lateral moves, and I think that's a I know that it's a combination of general staff dysfunction and guys thinking they weren't going to have a job after last year. But what that did, I talked to Dooley about this a little bit in spring ball, and this is how he spins it, and of course he would, is that it's a good chance for a lot of guys who have been through three or four position coaches, you know, to get a fresh start, and they're probably used to fresh starts. But what I think is really important is who he brought in to replace Wilcox. He brought in Sunseri from Alabama. And the thing about Sunseri is that he and Dooley worked together on Saban's staff at LSU. And the thing that Dooley emphasized the most when I was talking to him in April was just the level of continuity that they got to start at. You know, they had both come up under Saban. They were both they were familiar with the organizational structure that he liked to run, and they liked to run, you know, they liked to run their administration the same way. So I think he said, and I believe him on that one at least, that that's going to be a smooth transition, at least from an administrative standpoint.
It'll be interesting to kind of watch them this year and see how it goes, because you're right, that Murderers Row of a schedule, really wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No, it was the worst. It was the worst schedule in the SEC, and it was a team that kept getting. There's this other story. You know, I don't know how national Tennessee's hilarious snap problems were going, but you know, we had to do all these offensive line shufflings and ended up with a left-handed center having to snap to our right-handed quarterback. Right, so he's snapping with his right hand. He's not right-handed.
Oh, that is what?
It was stuff like that. It was just. So much, I've said this a lot, but so much happened to them instead of rather than because of them last year that I can't tell you where this program's going. I have no idea. And this is obviously the program I watch more than any other. I have no idea what they're going to do this year.
It has to be one of those things where, you know, luck and karma maybe kind of equal out, because really Tennessee did get screwed by luck and injuries and all that last year. Like, you've got to think that you'll kind of regress towards normal at least this year, and maybe no one will get injured. Like, it was bad.
It was really, really bizarre what happened last year. And I mean, and that's why it doesn't give me any confidence to say they're going to be better this year, because they were going to be better last year, and then everyone's limbs started falling off.
Oh, it was just terrible.
So I think they're going to be better this year. The schedule is certainly set up for them to be better this year. You know, they get. I almost said they get Florida at home, like Florida's a game anymore. They get Alabama at home. They got to go to Georgia. They got to go to South Carolina. God, and I almost opened my mouth to say they got to go to Vanderbilt, but let's not treat that like it's a game.
Oh.
But I it's my job to make predictions, and I'm terrified of making predictions about this team because, you know, who knows what haunted Civil War battleground they're lining up over in practice that's making these things happen.
So, Tyler Bray, best offseason training ever, or?
Love.
He's the bottle throwing, like, the best.
Let me tell you something. Now, let me turn on my talk radio voice and tell you what happens when I do radio in Knoxville. And I remind people that at this point in his career, this is where Peyton Manning sat bare-assed on that trainer's face.
I think that
so after breaking his freshman passing records, I think that Bray is just seeking to emulate Manning in every way.
Really, I mean, if that's the case, he's going to have a hell of a year.
Honestly, I think – and I lamented in April because Tyler Bray used to be the best interview. He was the best interview. You go in there after the Vanderbilt game and – you're like, you know, Tyler, tell us about your thought process in that winning touchdown. He's like, I had no idea what play we were running. I just threw it to Torin. And he said, no, he says this flat out. And that was great. And then we saw him in April in spring practice. And he's like, oh, you know, I've really been working on my mechanics and my footwork. And he'd cut his hair. And, you know, he was horsing around with little kids, you know, who had come to visit and taking pictures with all these cute little Moppet fans. I was like, well, this is boring. And then he turns it around.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be in there somewhere. You have that nice little act, and then you're throwing bottles off a balcony, which was the best. It was one of my favorite stories this summer was Tyler Bray's chucking bottles off the balcony. It's like, all right, off-season training. It's getting
sparking. I'm so glad that he's – I'm really glad that he's still him, because if a team cannot be good all the time, I always want them to be interesting.
And
like Stephen Garcia, I loved him. I loved Stephen Garcia. I cried real human tears when he left. And now we have our own.
He was always an entertaining guy, at least to say the least. Garcia was. And you never knew if he was going to show up drunk to a meeting or just go completely off the reservation. And there he was.
Stephen Garcia having the gall to be a college kid who liked beer.
It's kind of college in a nutshell. Like, yeah, you're a college football player, and we expect all this of you, or people do, but damn, they're going to have fun. They're going to go out and get minor possession charges or whatever. Like, that's being a college kid.
Yeah, that's not being a college athlete. That's being a college kid. And let's not say that I don't think Tyler Bray is an idiot for chucking beer bottles off a balcony and making hairpin turns right in front of a wildlife agent boat. You heard about the reckless boating charge, right? That was right after that.
Wait a minute. No, I've missed this.
Wait. Okay, you don't know that Tyler Bray had a court appearance last week for a reckless jet skiing charge?
Oh, no, I did not.
Yeah.
So he turned in front of a wildlife...
He was they were hot dogging around on the jet skis out at the lake, and some people fell off theirs, and he drove close to them and like did one of the like spin turns where you spray them with water. Did this directly in front of a Department of Wildlife boat, which by the way are really difficult to miss.
Yeah, usually they're kind of like big lights,
it's,
big boats.
Yeah, it's got like a radio tower on the back of it. So he does this right in front of it, and of course had to go to court for that. I think he has to take like boating safety classes.
Man, why? I'll be honest though. Why are you going to take boating safety classes when he made this perfect hairpin turn to pick people up? Like you passed. You're done.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you can't even make any jokes about his footwork there because look how tight that turn was.
Yeah, I mean it's perfect. Again. Everything he's done this offseason is some kind of training. That was some hand-eye coordination to stop the boat. Didn't hit anybody. So, I mean, what's the point of education classes? He's got it.
No, I treasure him. I'm going to be so sad. I'm sure that he's going to leave for the draft after this. He goes really high on draft boards because he's tall, even though all they have to go on really is his freshman body of work and the Cincinnati game from last year. But, man, if he does all this and turns out to be a decent quarterback, could you imagine?
Oh, it would be so fun to watch him, and I hope that he never, ever changes and that back tattoo stays.
That dude, do you know that I have a fake tattoo of that a reader made for me, like to go across my knuckles?
Oh, my God.
I haven't worn it yet. I blame myself for his injury because I got it right before the Georgia game last year and didn't wear it because I was going to the press box. I was like, well, that's inappropriate.
I don't know if that's inappropriate, though. Like, that seems like it's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't really buy, I mean, of course I'm not going to cheer into the press box, but I don't really buy into the idea that people should, you know, tamp down their natural fandoms just because they're writing. That's what's so great about SB Nation is because it doesn't ask people to be objective, because who's really objective? Nobody.
No, everybody has biases. Sports writers, everybody. Like, you went to a school, you have an alma mater, you're always going to hold a special place in your heart. You can try to hide it, but it'll show up at some point.
I have a ticket stub for my first Tennessee-Alabama game. I was 10 months old. You think I'm going to, like, just, like, smash that down for the purposes of a job? Nope.
Yeah, especially when you were born and raised in it. Like, that's just how it goes.
I mean, and the key is that you have to hit – the key, I think, is that you really have to hit your own program as hard as anybody else's and maybe a little bit harder, which is why, you know, back in the EDSVS days when something happened to Tennessee – you would think that Spencer would be the one to write it up, you know, as a Florida fan. No, I did.
Yeah.
I was making jokes about pellet guns on the front page and calling, saying that Lane Kiffin should start a giant catfish over Jonathan Crompton at quarterback. I think the key is just to treat your own team like everybody else's.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to make jokes about everybody else's, you've really got to come hard at your own when something happens.
The one exception that I do make is that no one is allowed to joke about Derek Dooley's hair in my presence. It's a graven idol.
Oh, it is the best. It's a treasured artifact that will live on forever. The hair and the pants.
It's immaculate. He hadn't said if he's going to do the pants this year. I don't think they were ready for it to turn into such a thing. And he's kind of sheepish when you ask him about it because he's one of these. I really don't think he knew that it was going to be a thing, that it was going to turn into such like a big viral phenomenon. And now he's kind of like, well, do I want this game to be about my pants?
Well, you when you're wearing bright orange pants, like, yeah, it's going to be a thing. People like that. It's pretty awesome.
I loved it. I thought it was great. They did. They had put the information department put out this whole trailer about the making of these orange pants because a local tailor in Knoxville was the guy who made them. And they played it on the Jumbotron during games. People were nuts.
Yeah, it's at this point, he can't walk that one back either. He has to just go with it. Like, his orange pants are part of his identity along with the immaculate hair.
And it was the only thing we had to be happy about last year. Let's face it.
Yeah, it was always a treat to see him in those orange pants on the sideline. Like, I like that. It was like the WSU game day flag. I would tune into Tennessee, see the pants, call it good.
There you go.
So we'll switch over to my side of the country right now. What do you think of the Pac-12, the new coaches? Is it going to be the major conference action this year?
If I could have a conference that I called God's conference, if SEC weren't God's conference, it would be the Pac-12. And that's not just because I lived out there. Between Leach coming back to the game, Lane Kiffin just continuing to exist in his smug little world, Rich Rod coming in with a quarterback who he could have recruited himself. I could not be more excited about the Pac-12. I'm going to be staying up late a lot. I'm excited about the network. Larry Scott's commitment to streaming and tablet and mobile technology has got a lot of people excited. And, yeah, love you guys.
I actually spent a bunch of time last night, A, figuring out where the network would be on my cable, and B, trying to figure out if I needed to order a sports package to get more Pac-12 network, and I think I do. But we're recording this on Tuesday. Network launches tomorrow. You know a little bit about the Pac-12 network. What are you expecting to see from that? They say we're getting all the games, we'll get replays, stuff like that. Is it, A, going to be a massive moneymaker like they think? They're talking about tens of millions of dollars a year per school or whatever. And B, is it kind of going to be the model for conference networks as the Big Ten network is now?
I'm hesitant to say whether or not it's going to be a moneymaker, but I hope that it is, because I hope that it becomes the model for everybody. Because, I mean, streaming and mobile and tablet is obviously, you know, wave of the future. That's our next big step up from these big groaning cable packages. But what excites me the most, maybe, about all of this is how they're bringing in each individual school to produce their own content. Like, that's something that I actually can't believe nobody else thought of first.
It's kind of weird how they're doing this, and you're really wondering, like, how did people not think of this first? Like, he was able to keep a bunch of inventory, so that's more money. He's got schools coming in to produce games. He's got the Olympic sports as far as, you know, per school. Replays of games, they're doing condensed replays, I guess, on Sunday, Monday, or whatever. Like, things like that. And then the mobile streaming tablet, like, that should be pretty much mandatory for any conference network at this point. So it'll be interesting to watch. Favorite Pac-12 team this year would be?
That's got to be y'all. Come on.
Mike Leach?
I lived down the street from USC for 3 years, and, you know, I watched a lot of practices, and I just kind of grew into a vague affection for them just because of osmosis or whatever. But come on. Y'all brought the Dread Pirate back, and you deserve everybody's allegiance.
He is rather entertaining. Like, haven't seen him in a game setting, but in practice, he is incredibly entertaining at this point. He was, yesterday we were laughing at him. They were throwing passes to start practice like they do. Wide receiver drops it, and then you just hear Leach off in the distance in a monotone voice yelling, "Catch the ball." That's all he does. Like, that was his deal. He just kind of stands off in the...
Because it is that simple. That totally plays into his way of thinking of that football is just super simple, and it's all in the execution.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what he does, is he'll stand off in the secondary when they're doing passing drills, yell out plays, and then scream at people if they don't catch the ball. Like, this is my way, this is how it works. So he's kind of fun to watch coach. So do you expect, like Washington State fans do, the Cougars will go 6-6 or whatever and go to a bowl?
You really want to hope for more. Because it's Leach, but God, y'all's schedule just does not lend itself well to making a big old run. But the good thing about it is that at least it's kind of backloaded or mid-loaded.
Yeah, I think mid-loaded is probably the front's rather easy, I guess. BYU's kind of
tough. Yeah, you got to go to BYU, but then you have like 3 games to warm up before you get to Oregon.
Yeah, and that's kind of the nice part. But then you get to Oregon, it's like, this could be a problem.
Yeah. What on earth is wrong with Oregon State? I've been meaning to ask you this.
What is their deal? I wish I could understand, because it's always like Mike Riley would always get the best out of his not-so-good players, and now it's just kind of like, what's the deal with Oregon State? They're broken. Like, he would – and his MO has always been start slow, finish strong. And then, you know, 2 years ago he lost to Washington State late in the season. That was kind of an eye-opener. Last year he lost to an FCS team. It just seems like
– like, start slow, finish dumb.
Yeah, like, they're just kind of broken, and I don't know if it's coaching or players or what, but they're kind of like the Washington State of Oregon. As in, like, they, you know, kind of get the second-rate players, and they have the bigger, more powerful school now in Eugene. and they're kind of having the same problems that we've been having.
I honestly feel, in terms of like gambling, that they're the Clemson of the West Coast. Can you confidently predict, you know, with any week how they're going to go?
Yeah, that's one that you just don't bet on. Like, you guys at EDSBS, you have, you know, fuck Clemson. Same thing with Oregon State. Like, if you bet on them against an FCS team, they'll lose. If you don't bet on them against, you know, a power team, they'll pull one out. It's really weird.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, like, what their deal is. So Washington State, maybe kind of sort of bowl game. As far as the Pac-12 goes, who's going to win the North? Who's going to win the South?
Oh, man, you're going to make me pick between Oregon and USC, aren't you?
Well, you know that Oregon will probably take the North. USC will take the South. Pac-12 championship game goes to?
Oregon. Because Chip Kelly is probably listening to this podcast, because it's a fine podcast, and he'll kill me next time he sees me if I don't say that.
You know what I'm actually looking forward to when Washington State hopefully isn't as bad as it is now is Mike Leach and Chip Kelly going at it.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's just like the offensive explosion genius battle on a field, and it would be amazing to see both teams good and, you know, those two kind of fighting it out.
I am so excited for September 29th. I will be, like, putting myself in a basket on my boss's doorstep begging to go to that game. Do you know what I'm really excited with for the Cougars, though, is heading into Arizona State with a full season of reps under the Leach system, which is, like, triple reps under your belt, with a passing defense that ranked, like, 108th last year in the country and is only going to be worse.
It's going to be fun, actually, early in the season to watch this offense against Colorado, because Colorado is playing like wide receivers and running backs in the secondary that were last year. They don't really have a secondary. And this is one of those games where, like, I think we expect them, like Washington State, to throw for 800 yards.
Yeah. I didn't mention Colorado cause I thought that was just going to be kind of sad and weird, but I hope that everyone else carries a special level of spite in their heart for Todd Graham.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't wait to watch him get wrecked. I'm so excited.
He's all excited about the Arizona State job, but I'm not sure he saw what he had on the roster before he took that job. It's just like our little happy freshman quarterback lit them up last year, and like by the end of the year, that ship wasn't just sinking. Like, it went down in such a hurry that it was kind of impressive.
I was at the Vegas Bowl. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you did. We were talking about that in that. Didn't you say that Hal Mumme was there?
Yeah. No, wait. That wasn't that game. Gary Barnett was there.
Oh.
Like, just doing radio, hanging out. Gary Barnett.
It's really weird around bowl season, like the characters that show up out of nowhere, it seems like. Like, all of a sudden, old coaches are doing analysis for somebody. It's just random.
Yeah, the guys doing radio, like, I bookended my year with disgraced Colorado coaches. I started last year meeting Dan Hawkins at the kickoff game in Atlanta.
That is such a weird kind of way to start and end the year. Like, here's Colorado guys.
I had a broken finger that I slammed in a door chasing my cat through the house, and I told him I broke it in a bar fight, and he believed me.
You are pretty convincing when it comes to that, though. Like, that doesn't work. Got in a bar fight, like, oh, okay, I buy it.
I mean, as one does. I don't know if you've been to the Georgia Dome, but that Taco Mac can get pretty fierce.
Are you going to the kickoff game this year again with everybody else?
I'll go to the first one. I'm going to Tennessee NC State. I assume I'm going to bring a sleeping bag, because between Bray and Mike Glennon and the state of tailbacks on both teams, I think that game's probably going to be like 9 hours long.
Which is pretty much what I'm looking at this year with every single Washington State game.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I think I'm going to go home, though, before Auburn-Clemson on Saturday, especially now that Watkins is out, because I was going to say you couldn't pay me to watch Auburn-Clemson. I guess technically they could pay me to watch Auburn-Clemson, but I think they said I can go home.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, too. It'd be fun if Watkins was there, because you never know what he's going to do, but...
Well, and I thought I was going to get to watch him ball out, you know, in the last game I saw him play in, which was the Orange Bowl.
That's right. So you were at the Orange Bowl.
Yes, yes.
How fun was that, and is Holgorsen the best guy on the planet, best coach?
As the product of a two parents with family in West Virginia, one born there, grown up watching the Mountaineers, even though I didn't go there, I had my fist in my mouth for like the last three quarters of that game. I was over in the Fox section. because the seats got shuffled. And, you know, everyone's there like hush hush in their microphones, and I'm like under the table just quivering with glee. Holgo came in. I don't think he'd washed off after the Gatorade bath. Came into post game and was like, "Well, that's about how we drew it up."
Yes.
I wish I could remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of, you know, they're like, "How'd that go?" And he's like, "Well, that's how we planned it."
He is the best. It always makes, like, I love that, the whole air raid side of the family, because all of those coaches are completely batshit insane in a great way. Like, you've got Mike Leach, who you already know. You've got Holgo, who, obviously, like you said, Cliff Kingsbury is, like, out there just completely broned out on the sideline, chilling. Just like, yeah, we're going to throw 50 times in a bowl game, and we'll call it good. Like, they're just so great. And Hal Mommy, obviously, is just the godfather of the family, and he's...
Oh, here's the quote. I found the quote. He walked in. He said, "Yeah, that's exactly how we draw it up, right?" That's what he said.
He's so great, and I'm so glad he's a head coach.
He's like Joe Biden, man. Like, any joke you make up about him involving, like, transams and divorcees, it's probably true. And it's probably truer than you know.
It's just like, you can't help but love him. And yeah, like you said, every time you joke about him, it's probably true. Like, the transam jokes has been running for I don't even know how long. All the Red Bull jokes, like, just true.
Like, I wish I was born like 10 years earlier, and that Dana Holgerson had taken over West Virginia football 10 years earlier. We could have gotten Whitesnake to play halftime.
Oh man, time travel, take him back.
Just missed opportunity. Larry Scott, tell Larry Scott to make us a time machine. Dude, speaking of air raid, you know who's going to be fun this year? You said you want to talk about small teams.
Oh, yes.
You watch Louisiana Tech that first Thursday night, because I think they're going to beat Texas A&M.
Yes, yes, yes. I love Louisiana.
I think they're going to do it.
And that first Thursday night is going to be great, because you have Louisiana Tech, Texas A&M, and then you get the air raid nightcap too. So it's like, it's perfect.
And then in between, you get to see if Steve Spurrier can hang 100 on Vanderbilt. And wouldn't that be fun?
I love that opening night schedule so much.
Oh my god, it's great, and it's usually complete crap. Usually it's South Carolina in some like 6-4 game, and like Virginia Tech, and it's usually just rancid. But this year, oh.
Well, it's usually like we're looking forward to it because it's football, and then it comes, and you're like, "Eh, that kind of sucked." And this year, I'm looking at the schedule like, "Oh my god, they set it up for us. Like, this is perfect."
Yeah.
So
that's another thing to be really excited about regarding the Pac-12 networks: a much wider variety of late night games. Not that I don't love the WAC, but the WAC's probably not going to exist for very much longer.
I'm going to miss the WAC.
I am too, man. Those 11:55 kickoffs, those Homer announcers in Hawaii.
They better not. The Homer announcers in Hawaii better like keep on keeping on, because...
No, so they got to keep those guys together. That ESPN made that mistake with the Daves. You know, when they took over the 12:20 Raycom kickoffs and they split up, because for a while, for our Pac-12 listeners, if you don't know, the SEC games were called on a regional network by three guys who were all named Dave.
Yep.
And they split them up. And one of them is even still with ESPN. One's with, like, Comcast, and one's off doing something else. But I really think they made a mistake when they went with that network and not reuniting the Daves. Don't make that mistake, and please keep those Hawaii announcers there.
For everybody that doesn't know, the Hawaii announcers are late night ESPN3. It's usually, like,
I think it's two guys who actually live there, right? It's the local
people. Yeah. Oh, they're complete homers, and it's always on middle of the night, last thing you see on Saturday, and you have East Coast SEC people staying up late to watch it, even Pac-12 were staying up late to watch it, but if you haven't seen them yet, you have to tune in to ESPN3 and watch a Hawaii home game, because these guys are the absolute best, just complete homers, don't even hide it, probably got money on the game, like, it's amazing.
I don't think we get a Saturday night Hawaii game this first week, but do you know who we do get at 10:30? Maybe the game I'm most excited about in week one is Arkansas State at Oregon. You want to talk about points.
Yes. Love that.
I hate that they couldn't move this game. I want this game to be later in the season, because I want Malzahn to have more time to get his war machine spun up. So I feel like we're not going to be seeing the best of Arkansas State versus Oregon. Which is sad, because I think they could craft like 200 points if they really tried.
Yeah, I think you could destroy all sorts of point records if that offense is actually hitting like it should be. Other games you're looking forward to on week one, other than the Thursday games, that game? Is there anything else that excites you?
Well, Friday night I told you about the 9-hour Tennessee game. Saturday early does not look great. unless you're super interested in seeing Florida International beat Duke, which I also think is going to happen.
Oh yeah, that yeah.
Yeah.
I can't.
There's the Friday night Boise State Michigan State game, which I'm going to miss because I'm not going to be there. There's like the Sadness Bowl at noon on Saturday with the Ohio Bobcats at Penn State.
Oh, I don't want to watch that either.
But the early Saturday game is kind of a shit show, man. Georgia's got Buffalo. Like, UNC's got Elon. Virginia has the Richmond Spiders, who won a national title under Mike London. That's like the most interesting thing that I can make happen. Maybe Southern Miss Nebraska? Could that be a sleeper hit of the 3:30?
It could be fun if Southern Miss is able to do what Southern Miss used to be able to do. I have no idea what they're going to do this year, but it could be something. It feels like that schedule on the first week is just front loaded. Like Thursday, Friday are like, woohoo, mm-hmm. football. And then it's like,
yeah, it's like the opposite.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, Saturday's here.
Maybe that's the way that it should be run, because we have really good stuff happening on Thursday, Friday night. And then Saturday it's made up for by just there being so much of it.
I think it's probably the football gods kind of smiting us for, oh, you get this great gift of football on Thursday. And then once you get to Saturday, you're probably going to be tired of it.
Yeah, crazy Old Testament God is a trickster God. I haven't mentioned Michigan and Alabama yet, by the way, because I just assume that we don't want to talk about that.
It's just, I don't know. It doesn't.
It's just, like- it's, yeah. It's just, Alabama's going to, like, sit on their heads for a little bit. And
it could be kind of funny to see Denard Robinson come back to earth so fast in the first week.
And it could be fun. It could be fun if that happens, and it could be fun if he doesn't come back to earth yet.
Yeah, I mean, if Denard Robinson is able to run around and run circles around the Alabama defense, like, more power to him, and it'd be really, really funny to watch. So, I mean, I think there's two outcomes in that game. Either outcome could be pretty interesting.
So, yeah, maybe we found the sweet spot. Maybe that's a win-win game for haters.
Yeah, I mean, either way, you can hate on something. If you want to hate on Alabama, roll tide. And if you want to hate on Denard Robinson, you could do that, too.
If you want to, you know, take a couple of Vicodin and get in the bathtub on Sunday afternoon, you can watch Kentucky Louisville at 3:30.
Oh, why is that game on the first
game? I don't know. It's the only. There have got to be other games on television that day, right? And they're probably like minor colleges, but right now on the ESPN listings, the only one that's on Sunday afternoon is Kentucky Louisville.
Like, can I get an FCS game or like something, anything? I just don't.
Oh, actually, you can. Alabama State and Bethune-Cookman are doing the SWAC challenge in the Citrus Bowl at noon.
Oh, hell yeah. That actually could be a point of viewing compared to Kentucky.
Yeah, you know, and you know who you've got at Alabama State now? Is Isaiah Crowell.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so you can watch him run around against an FCS defense.
See, I love the SEC cast-offs that end up going, like, random. Well, it's not really random. They all end up at the same places.
It all used to be North Alabama, and now Terry Bowden's at Akron.
Yeah, and it's like they'll show up at Arkansas State or Alabama State or, you know, one of those schools. It's like now you have your little mini FCS team of cast-offs.
Yeah, I was like, I think it'd be really interesting to see what North Alabama does this year without that, like, recruiting inroad from Terry Bowden's Island of Misfit Toys.
It was the best, though.
It's like every discipline case you could name off your team and off all your cousins' teams in the past couple of years, if you live in this part of the country, is playing for Terry Bowden, who's now at Akron. Could you have predicted? You know, last year there were no Bowdens coaching major college football. You just let that sink in.
And then this year,
there's one, and he's at Akron.
At least, like, that's kind of, you know, world balance is restored, because it didn't seem right to not have a Bowden somewhere, anywhere.
You actually just reminded me of a post I have to make, because I think I must have blocked this out last night. We were watching the Braves. Do you know what Tommy Bowden's doing this year?
No, I do not.
Tommy Bowden? No, crap, not Tommy Bowden. Terry Bowden. I just totally did a Tommy Bowden there. no, wait, it is Tommy Bowden. Oh, God. Tommy Bowden. You know that? Have you ever seen that CBS segment from like 2006 when Tommy Bowden looks very seriously at the camera and says he doesn't think Bobby can name his grandchildren?
Yeah.
That's what happened to me just right then. Tommy is doing a Fox Sports South show, and they've got a series of commercials running around to promote it that I'm going to do a post on this afternoon because I completely forgot about. That's him wheeling this old-fashioned X's and O's chalkboard around behind him all through the studio, including into the men's room, like it's his little wooden duck paddle toy. It is the most pathos-laced 30 seconds of television I've ever seen in my life, and I watched Morgan Newton fall over on his own snap last year.
And he, yeah, that was probably the best part of week one was
Morgan Newton
almost sacked himself for his safety, and we were being serious. Like, Jason and I were working that night, and he's like, well, Morgan Newton almost sacked himself for his safety, and this is the game.
Yeah.
That was our week one, was like, okay, what's on? That was how terrible it was. Like, we were like, hey, yay, football. And then Morgan Newton sacks himself, and we're just like, that was probably the only thing we got today.
Sunrise, sunset.
So we'll wrap it up with probably easy, I don't even know. National championship game, who's going to play it, who's going to win it?
Oh, man, we haven't even done crystal ball yet. I'll tell you what I'm working on right now. It's like I'm working on conference previews for all the non-AQ conferences. So, of course, you say that, and I'm like, oh, Louisiana Tech. No, probably.
I would love so much if that did happen, though.
I'm not really – I don't have a good feeling about anybody because you know me. Because year before last, I picked Washington to win it as my national title sleeper pick. So, obviously, I'm not good at this. Last year I picked Oklahoma State, so I was closer.
Yeah, that actually had a legitimate chance of happening.
This year I got it. Alabama's had so many defensive losses. It's very tricky to repeat. USC have a lot of concerns about their depth, a lot of concerns about defensive line. Thankfully, no longer concerns at tailback, thanks to Silas Red. I might have to give this to LSU now that they actually have a quarterback and a reloadable defense. I don't think they're going to miss Matthew as much as people think they are, except in, like, big play situations.
Yeah, that was kind of the same thing I was thinking, was they'll really, really miss him with the big plays and punt returns, kick returns, whatever. But you know that secondary, and you know how it goes.
And then Zach Mettenberger will be the – yeah, they're just going to plug in a kid with his exact same skill set. They're going to miss him on returns more than they're going to miss him at corner. I'm among those people who think he was overrated at corner. But, you know, the last time I saw him play was in the national title game, so I'm probably biased for what happened in that game. But Zach Mettenberger becoming the first person to be banned from Valdosta and win a national title in the same lifetime would be so sweet.
It needs to happen. Like, how do you get banned from Valdosta?
I'm going to try and relate what Valdosta, Georgia is like, and then I realized it's probably a lot like Pullman.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Mike Leach loves it here.
For those of you listening who want to get out of your college town forever, Zach Mettenberger, think of a starting quarterback getting banned from a place like Pullman, only smaller and sleepier.
He needs to win the national title following that. And when you're getting banned from Valdosta, like, that's, you had to mess up pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, they'll take what they can get.
Yeah.
But now that Les Miles probably has a suitable quarterback that isn't Jordan Jefferson and isn't pitching the ball to the defense.
No, but he's got a replacement Jordan Jefferson in the form of Rob Bolden, just in case.
I could never understand that transfer. Like, oh, hey, we got a
Bolden. He wants another Jordan Jefferson. They got to the national title game last year. He thinks Jordan Jefferson's a lucky charm now.
He is like Les Miles is just like wearing his wizard hat, and he's like, oh, I can replicate this. And
he makes all these decisions with a 20-sided die. You know this.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that he's really good at dice.
Yeah, he's amazing at it. He's probably the world's best dice player.
Yeah.
So that's all we've got. Holly Anderson, SI.com. Visit the Campus Union blog. We'll have a link in the post for this. But daily visit, bookmark it. She's always got awesome stuff going up. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you smile. It will take you away from the badness of football and bring you the happiness. Thank you for joining us, Holly. Appreciate it.
Thanks, dear.
Yes, ma'am.